Today is Thursday, February 14th, 2019. It's 11:16 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio in Chicago. Listen to me weekdays from 1 to 3, Steve Bertrand.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Patty Vasquez, and I host evenings Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist with the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the newly minted White Sox fan. Column in the Tribune.
We've got a lot to talk about in Trump land today, but we'll start with the Chicago and Illinois scene, and the Cubs are certainly on that front. By the way, happy Valentine's Day to you all.
Aww. Same to you.
Scott's wearing a reddish top. Patty's got the red going on. The other boys, not so much.
A little red lines in my shirt.
Yeah. It's not happening. Eric, you do not get a Valentine's Day.
Do you look at the calendar and choose what you're going to wear?
Well, on Valentine's Day?
Yeah,
on the 4th of July?
This was the first Valentine's Day. My son is now 15. Griffin is 15. And this was the first time he basically had the, I'm not wearing red for Valentine's Day.
Mom, you can't dress me today.
I want to say that this is maroon. You guys both have maroon. This is an audio thing, but this is not like the red
of Valentine's. We're both old married guys. The red.
Patty's is like purple. Come on.
Purple. Right.
You look like you're dressed more for Lent than Valentine's Day.
Let's start talking about what Eric just referred to. We have so many Chicago stories, so we're going to go quickly today. The Chicago Cubs have announced, it's no great surprise, you knew something like this was percolating, but in 2020 they'll team up with a company called Sinclair Broadcasting, and they will have a Cubs exclusive channel, and you will have to pay extra for it. Cubs games will no longer be on free TV or free digital TV. You will have to pay for the Cubs games, with maybe just a few exceptions over the course of the year. How much will it cost? You speculation is $5-6 a month extra, and if you don't want to watch the Cubs but you want, say, the Comcast package which might include Sinclair, you're going to have to pay for it anyway. We don't know all of the details yet, but that's the general framework of it, and it's enough to make Eric Zorn say
part of a larger pattern of stories we've talked about on this podcast with Joe Ricketts, with Aroldis Chapman, with Addison Russell, and the way the team is going after, the way the Cubs organization is going after Alderman Tunney. At some point, you just got to say, you know what? They were lovable losers. They won the World Series. And now maybe it's time to move on.
Now they're just kind of jerks.
Move on to what?
I'm the White Sox. We got another team in town.
Right here on WGN.
They have a nice ballpark. You can get tickets.
Really? You're done? This is it?
I'm going to try. I really am going to try. It's, we got another team in town. I have an aversion to the White Sox that goes back to childhood when I was a Tiger fan, but I think I can overcome
this. This reminds me very much. I worked in Phoenix for a little while, and the Suns were the only major league team they had there at the time, and everybody adored them, watched them. And one of our columnists did a great story. He said, what a major league team really needs is about 40,000 followers. That's it. To buy the luxury boxes, a block of season tickets, and to buy this premium channels and stuff like that. So essentially what those teams, the Phoenix Suns to begin with, but now the Yankees have their own network, the Dodgers have their own network, I think the Red Sox do, and now the Cubs are saying to us, who go to a handful of games a year, but love to watch them, and what they're saying to the rest of the nation is, screw you, we just want the money.
Yeah, they won't be on a superstation.
And it's short-term, because year after year after year after year, long before they won the World Series, they were always in the top three for ancillary sales of major league teams. That's NFL, NBA, all of them. And the reason for that is very simple and very basic. They were on basic cable. So kids like me growing up in San Diego or in Houston or anywhere could go home and watch a Cubs game. And kids grew up doing that.
By ancillary sales, do you mean like merchandise? Like,
yeah, the caps, the jerseys.
And that's the thing. Yesterday, I boxed up. When we became the White Sox station last year, I laughed because I went into my hallway and I have all these racks of baseball hats on hooks. And I had about a dozen Cubs hats and not a set. I was digging. I'm like, I think I have a Sox hat somewhere. And I couldn't find one. And yesterday, and this has been a long time coming, when we lost the Cubs, I got it, right? It was all about business. It was about numbers.
When WGN Radio did.
Yeah, when we lost them. And we had a good relationship, obviously. That's what I grew up with. I loved the Cubs. But when the Cubs became the Ricketts team, I would hear these stories in the background about their politics. And I was like, you know what? That's their business. They get to do what they want with their money. And then you start hearing more stories. And again, the Joe Ricketts emails were partly down the road from me. Like, they're not responding. responding to this very well. But yesterday I woke up and I read the story about Sinclair and about this whole network. Marquee, I think, is the name of this the channel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I get to make a business decision. I work for the flagship station of the Chicago White Sox. I need to help build my brand with the White Sox. They're my lead in at when I'm on at 10 p.m. You know what? This is my for my family, I'm going to make a business decision here, and I'm all in on the White Sox.
I get it. I'm completely with you, and that's what I did last year, Patty. I didn't have the allegiance to the Cubs that most people at this radio station did, because I was happy the Cubs were on our station, but I was never a crazy Cubs fan. Now I'm so striving for the White Sox because it's good for them. We've neglected that audience for too long, and it's good for us. So I'm a big White Sox guy now. But this Cubs thing has bothered me, maybe for what Eric said. It's the confluence of all of these things, right? It's just a whole storm for the Cubs in the last week.
I don't think they're related. I don't think this is related to all of that other stuff. I mean, look.
It is in my brain, if that matters.
They've won the World Series. It's a business. They're in a business to make money.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, this works for the Yankees, right? Now, you had said yesterday it doesn't work so well for the Dodgers, but I mean, I think this is the way of the future. And, you know, they created their own channel.
But it's so short-sighted,
well, you know,
Steve.
What? Maybe it is, but what share do they get of the Cubs jacket that is sold in San Diego? How much money do they get from that compared to what they're going to get from all of us who watch cable TV?
I think, though, Steve, locally, a lot of kids, like Scott said, locally grew up watching the Cubs because it was free and they were that team. And now if you can't watch them free on TV, and if families like Patty's decide to pull the plug on cable because they're not going to pay extra for it anymore.
Yeah, $5 to $6 a month.
Then those kids aren't going to see the
game. Are you going to pull the plug on your entire cable package?
It's not a la carte, Patty.
I was already planning to.
And this tips you over. Screw it now.
I think that's going to happen. I have a memory. When I first moved to Chicago, this was in the 80s, the Sox were on something, I think, was it called
Sports Vision?
Sports Vision.
Yes.
Sports Channel, maybe.
Oh,
and it was kind of like you could never watch Sox games, and it was like the Blackhawks were never on TV, their home games were on TV, and it was like one of those things where it was like this niche product. And the Cubs were kicking their butts with fans because they were on Channel 9 all the time.
I'm sorry, Eric.
I think Scott's absolutely right. That it's a short-sighted business decision.
Yeah.
I think you're also going to find that there are enough Sox fans in town, enough people who are disgusted by this, that they're going to ask their cable subscribers to wall off this, and they're going to make it like an HBO, not like ESPN. ESPN right now, everybody at this table probably pays, who has cable, is paying $7 or $8 a month for ESPN. ESPN is a huge range of material.
Most channels cost $1 or less.
But
pay dearly.
So this is going to hike your cable. For a White Sox fan, is going to have to pay $5 extra on his Comcast cable bill or his Dish Network, whatever. $5 extra for a Cubs channel that he or she does not want. And I think this is going to accelerate cord cutting, and it's going to make these providers wall this off. Like, yes, you can subscribe to this extra, and it's going to marginalize this audience ultimately down the line.
Steve's making
they may make more money, but it's not, it'll be just less of a
plus. Are there going to be must reads on the broadcasts? I'm just wondering.
That's fair. Sinclair famously had their anchors read conservative editorials,
yeah,
and that blew
sports.
Up on
They
them.
Have also been in sports broadcasting and had other ventures.
So you don't think this is such a big deal?
I feel like I'm at the meeting of the blacksmiths convention right before Henry Ford comes on the scene.
Wow.
We will always ride our horses.
I mean, I'm talking strictly as a cowgirl riding it on my horse, and I just got the shoes replaced.
You guys, new topic now. Former Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke, found guilty in the shooting death of Laquan McDonald, was transferred to a federal prison in Connecticut last week and was promptly, within hours of his arrival, attacked. I understand that he might have been transferred there out of security reasons out of Illinois, but putting him in a general prison population, even a minimum risk population, proved dangerous. His wife insists that he was targeted as a former cop who killed a young black man.
And we do know that this attack was because of this case. It was not random.
How do you know that?
He's a police officer who was convicted of doing something on duty.
Yes,
it was going to happen.
But he was attacked upon his arrival. A tearful press conference just ended about an hour ago. This makes no sense to me.
I've watched way too many prison shows, and I'm like, yeah, this is how this goes down.
It happened to Scott Peterson when he went to Indiana. He was attacked over there, too.
Whitey Bulger, who had a much
they
worse.
They got a target on their back.
Yeah,
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Dahmer,
that's
killed,
true
right?
as well.
Dahmer and Bulger were killed. it does seem to me incumbent on any, you know, prison official to realize the danger of this and to realize that, you know, you've got to keep someone like this isolated, at least for while he acclimates. So they said within like 2 hours he was beaten up or something like that.
He was there.
It shouldn't happen. I mean, no matter what you think of Jason Van Dyke, being in prison is his punishment, not getting beaten up.
That's the thing, because she paints a very sympathetic picture, and it's terrible what happened. I hate to say this, but I don't think that changes the fact that he's guilty and that he might have to be sentenced even longer than the 80-some months that he got.
A totally separate question, though, from whether he deserves to be beaten up in prison.
How this would sort of temper people's enthusiasm for that, because, my God, the guy's already been beaten up in
jail. Do we know why they transferred him to begin with? It seems very murky.
I haven't seen a good answer. It seems to me like it would be a security reason.
That's what they said in Peterson's case.
They clearly had security concerns. The IDOC, the Department of Corrections, said they were not going to tell us what prison he was based in. They transferred him out to Connecticut without telling even his family, evidently. So this is obviously related to security concerns. And then when you have these security concerns, then go play with your new friends. It's appalling. And someone's needs to lose his administrative position.
And how many people in prison are victims of this kind of violence? We don't know. I mean, it's not uncommon as well.
I bet it happens a lot.
Right.
But
this is a high-profile story. And
I never understood prison jokes. Like, it's funny. It's not funny. You're locking someone up. You're supposed to... Their safety is supposed to be protected while they're serving their time.
Oh, I understand prison jokes. People have no sympathy for them. That's what you get.
And
they don't go to jail.
Is, I mean, I don't think they have for state prisons. And he's in state prison. He's not. I think this is federal. But he should. I don't know.
That was part of the conundrum.
That's a strange question. But he should be in a minimum security setting, because I don't think. I mean, he did a terrible thing, but I don't think he is like a risk. First of all, he's I'm certainly not a flight risk, and I don't think he's a risk. I mean, so I think he is a minimum security prisoner.
He's going to be a choir boy in jail because he wants to get out in 3 years.
He's no more dangerous than Rod Blagojevich. He should be in a similar kind of setting.
He shot a person to death. So then what do you tell someone who's serving 10 years for drug possession or drug sales? I mean, do you argue, well, you know, that
yeah,
wasn't...
I would argue that. I would definitely say
you
that.
You would argue everything.
I would. It is my way.
You're
Eric
Zorn.
That's right.
Well, the second half of that equation, though, is now the AG of Illinois, the Attorney General, is trying to petition to have the sentence extended. I've never heard of this before. Is this something? This isn't common.
It's not common, but it does happen. We spoke to the special prosecutor, and he said that it has happened before, but again, maybe not in such a high profile case. And it does not happen often. That's for sure, Scott.
And to be clear, the point that they're making in this is that the judge Gaughan, misapplied the sentencing law. They're not saying we want it to be longer or shorter. They're saying we believe the judge erred here. This is a judicial error that the courts can order him to resentence Gaughan under the law, resentence Van Dyke under the law. So that's what the petition is asking
because
for.
Because in Illinois, the penalty for aggravated assault is greater than it is for second-degree murder, which seems to be backwards to me.
It does, except second-degree murder often handles these cases which are kind of like really terrible mistakes, and so, you know, so it's not like,
right,
so you can see where aggravated battery with a firearm could often be more serious. So that's, I think that's,
well,
I mean,
this
is
why I'm going to be king someday, because they would come to me and go, well, what do you think should happen? I go, all right, I don't know what your rules are. You shot him 16 times. I've seen the video. It's going to be a lot longer sentence than what he's got. You're not getting out in 3 or 4 years. That would have been my attitude. Let's move on briefly to
not yet.
The Jussie Smollett story. The actor mugged downtown last month has been, would you say, slow to cooperate with police? They're still tippy-toeing around his odd story and behavior. He was on one of the, was it Good Morning America?
Good Morning America today. I don't think he's been slow to cooperate other than
with the phone records.
Turning over his phones.
Well, that's a pretty, I don't know, maybe that's not a big deal, right? All that does is demonstrate a time and that he was on the phone with
his agent.
Well,
he said he was on the phone with his, right at the time, the manager, I think. You know, he had a good defense of that. He's like, look, I've got personal pictures on here. I've got personal emails. I've got my actor friend's phone numbers.
They finally turn over the records.
So I don't want to turn it over and lose, you know, who knows who's going to do what with that when they've got it for 4 or 5 hours in the police lab.
Fine.
Erase them like they did the Burger King tape.
I just think if it is as horrible as he says it was, that they put a rope around his neck and they poured a liquid on him, maybe bleach, and they called him those awful words, then I would be so cooperative.
If that's the biggest source of evidence that you have, I mean, I don't know if there's a way to work it out where I'm in the room with the tech or we go through, you know, I show
right.
you what
the audio
is.
Right, how do we do that? And then the records that one of them did turn over was highly redacted. I mean, it was so much so that the police said this isn't helpful. If you really want us to find these guys, you've got to be all in. And so far, he's not.
Well, and they have found the two guys. The police aren't saying men. They're saying two persons of interest that they believe are captured on that surveillance. And they're talking to them. They said, as of this 11:30 this morning, Thursday, they said they're not considered suspects. But they're interested in what they had to say. Now, Smollett, in the Good Morning America interview, said he's very confident that the two persons on that video are the people who attacked him.
When that was released, I was like, okay, we're getting somewhere. I don't have any doubt in my mind that that's them.
They didn't. It was almost impossible, was it not, to discern the race of those individuals on that video?
From the images I saw, I don't know how you would ever... say who they were.
I think what the police are saying is they were able to follow them then through other surveillance and through public transportation. So perhaps they got better views of them as they went along.
Wow. On the mayoral front, the Chicago Sun-Times has endorsed Lori Lightfoot. Your Chicago Tribune has endorsed Bill Daley.
And so has that guy that gave him a bunch of money.
Ken Griffin.
Ken Griffin, yeah, the richest man in the country or in the state. In an exclusive WGN Radio Perspective, veteran newsman Walter Jacobson said it's now silly time in state electoral politics.
Things have gotten kind of silly. As we get toward the end of the line, it's the silly season where they stop talking, candidates stop talking about, and reporters stop asking them about the issues that are important, and they start playing each other off against each other.
Who's been most surprising and who's been most disappointing to you guys in the last week, Steve? Most surprising, most disappointing. They've upped their game, or you go, really? Crap. Now,
I think Bill Daley's upped his game. Bill Daley, when he was in here the day he announced, I think the question I asked of him was, why should we believe you're going to stay in the race? Remember? Because he toyed with the governor's race and then dropped out pretty quickly. I'm surprised that Daley is getting...
Beaten up for his insurance exam
cheating?
No,
I think he's steamrolling everyone else. He's picking up endorsements. I think the Tribune endorsement is going to help. I did not think he'd be where he is right now.
I've got to say, I don't know anybody who supports Daley. And, I'm a Northwest Sider. I talk to a lot of people. I've never heard anybody say, I'm voting for Daley. I posted on my Facebook wall, I just posted the link to our editorial and say, what do you think? You know, more than 100 comments, basically one or two are positive. On the Tribune social media feeds, the Chicago Tribune's Facebook page and the Tribune's Twitter account, they were just completely hammered for this endorsement. I don't know. I mean, I hate to say I don't believe the polls, but I'm suspicious about these polls. I just don't know that there's a real appetite for another Mayor Daley. And I think his last name and the history of his family is really going to redound against
the Tribune
story. I thought it would too, but I don't know that he's. I had a chance to talk to him. And he thinks 18% is the threshold. The two candidates who are going to go on need
to make it to the runoff.
Need to get 18%.
Right, and the thing right now isn't like the front runner undecided. I mean, isn't that who's polling
the best?
The
front runner's coming down, but
it was. When was the most recent poll?
Well, nobody's polling over 20%. I mean, yeah. I guess it could be split among the others.
In the early poll, the undecided was 24% and was the top vote getter.
Who in this room is undecided right now? I'm undecided. Are you undecided, Patty? Have you made up your mind?
You see me blink a little bit. I'm good. I think I'm good to go.
You knew you got yours. How about you?
Well, I'm not voting.
But if you were, I mean, I think this is a fair question for suburbanites.
Sure, yeah, I think so.
You would have a dog in this, hon? How about you?
Yes, of course. I have made up my mind.
Okay, so that's three are decided. Are you decided?
Yeah.
Four. Well, I completely misjudged the room.
Ever been decided on anything?
It's been a good commercial I see on my way out the door to vote. That's usually how I roll the dice on these things. I'm so disappointed in Bill Daley, but I'm also curious what you guys think about
why are you supported in Bill Daley?
Disappointed.
Because of the insurance thing. And
really?
Because it just gave me pause. It's another Daley. There's nothing new under the sun here.
Especially when he says, I didn't have anything to do with my family business, that they have nothing to do with me. I'm living my own life. When he benefited from that clearly throughout his life.
Okay, but do you guys think that that Tribune story about the fact that in 1974 he may have got some, but what am I, flip-flopping?
You are such a flip-flopper.
Why? What did I do
Because now? You just said you're disappointed in Daly because of the test in 1970, and now you're about to say, do you think the Tribune should have done it? Is that unfair?
He's evolving, Steve.
Or did the Tribune do it because they knew they were going to support him? So like, oh, look, no, we did this
piece.
Wait. It's a balancing act.
I want to jump right in here and say that there really is a very strong wall between the editorial page and the reporters.
Eric, how relevant was that Tribune page one story that 40 years ago he may have got somebody to help him on it, or somebody may have helped him on his insurance exam?
I don't think that particular story is all that relevant. I was not happy with his response to it. I thought that he should have acknowledged that there was some shenanigans that took place 46 years ago.
That somebody cheated for him.
Okay, but it was 46 years ago.
And he accepted that and still hasn't owned that.
Well, I think he has to own it. And that's why I was disappointed in. And I got pushback from his campaign. They said, really, you think we should look back as far? You know, and I said, yes, I think we are in a time right now, especially now. You know, we're dealing with the whole stuff in Virginia where you're looking back. In, you know, Northam's case, it was, 35 years ago?
Sure, 1984.
So you're looking 34 years ago. You're looking back at these old things. So if you're looking back at what Daly did, yeah, I think he needs to own it. Apologize for it and move on, but not owning it is, to me, is a contemporary sin.
You talked about disappointed. You know whose campaign has been remarkably lackluster and just, well, and at best and at worst just terrible, is Preckwinkle's.
I agree.
I thought Tony was going to be out of the gate, being her usual competent, you know, serious self.
Highest name recognition, or among them.
Yeah,
right? Daly, Preckwinkle, who else is up that high?
I will add Mendoza, something else I thought that observation, which is that a lot of progressives that I know were weighing Amara Enya versus Lori Lightfoot. And the case for Amara Enya seems to just be collapsing. She was sued today by her former campaign spokesman.
Oh,
she,
wow.
She had this weird thing where she claimed to have finished an Ironman triathlon.
I don't think that was a weird thing, Eric.
It was a weird thing. It was yet one more thing with her tax returns not being.
Well, who amongst us has not forgotten to report a third of our income?
And the fine she had to pay. I mean, she just seems like she's not together enough to be mayor of the city of Chicago.
I think she's sneaky the way a lot of people are if they can get away with it, right?
Okay, so
on their taxes and income.
So most of the people I know who are on the progressive side have shifted to Lightfoot. I have a strong.
That was the number one name that popped up on my poll on Facebook.
And, is that right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking at her. The polls aren't necessarily showing that. But I'm seeing that out there, because I think a lot of people who are kind of wondering who's the candidate who the people on the left are going to support. The lakefront liberals, if you will, I think it's going to be Lori Lightfoot. I don't know if she's going to make the runoff.
I don't think Toni Preckwinkle looks like she's having fun. You know,
has she ever?
Well, she has. She's very serious.
But I mean, I think that's part of it. I don't think she looks like she's enjoying this, and I think that's one of the reasons that there's not been a lot of enthusiasm.
Because every scandal that pops up, her name's involved
in
it.
Right.
I mean, it's remarkable.
Well, wasn't there also that it seemed as though there was a presumption of her sort of becoming the mayor of Chicago, I think, plays into it as well. The party, the Democratic Party, the committee's behind her, and it's not as easy as she thought it was going to be with this big field.
Can you just entertain me for a second, Patty? Are you familiar with the half marathon Enya story very much?
Only what I heard on your show.
Okay, so
no.
So no. That's all a person needs to know.
She ran
a half Ironman, but the people that put it on in Wisconsin, as I understand, borrowed that phraseology and called it one, and it's still a 74-mile endurance race. Mm-hmm. And so on her biography, it says ultramarathoner, Ironman finisher or something. I think optics matter, but sometimes for the silliest reasons. This is not important, and this is not a lie. This is not Bill Daly cheating on his insurance exam.
You're absolutely right about that.
Well, I mean, like, on your resume, you're going to put an Ironman-like competition? I don't
know.
You want to say that you accomplished it.
She's a triathlete, and she's, you know, I mean, that is an amazing achievement to finish half an Ironman triathlon.
It is, but just this whole trend of elected officials running and you know, pumping up their resumes. It's like Kamala Harris saying, you know, I used to smoke a lot of weed and listen to Tupac and
Kanye. Was it Tupac and Kanye?
No, it was Tupac and
which one's cooler?
I can't remember, but it was. But by the way, it was also music that hadn't been recorded yet.
Diddy? Yeah. So she used to smoke pot and listen to that, and someone said that we now have to call that Bongazi.
Oh. That's a good headline.
People's recollections of their past are not encyclopedic. They're not perfect. I don't think when somebody gets a detail like that wrong, you can bust them for lying the way, say, the president does. Let's go to Trump land.
It's like there's a horse loose in a hospital.
Steve Chapman, by the way, great columnist, talking about how if you take all these little flaws that the Democratic candidates have, all the little things, wrinkles in their past, the American Indian thing for Elizabeth Warren, you put them all together, and they're still not even close to what Trump does like an average week.
On a Thursday. Yeah. In Trump land, the president has been resolute this week that there was no collusion with the Russians and that a Senate Intel Committee's proven that. He said he's unhappy with the wall funding that's before him. If it doesn't go his way, he'll find another way. And in one tweet, he upped the ante. He said $23 billion he's going to get. Notably, he unveiled at his El Paso rally the new mantra, which is now finish the wall.
And
think about how clever that is. Not build the wall. Some people got hung up on his misrepresenting the size of his crowd versus Beto O'Rourke, Steve Bertrand, but I saw this as something trivial, the sort of lying that children and Donald Trump regularly do. It's not a big deal. Apropos of nothing, he also tweeted this week an Instagram video of two jaguars snuggling. Okay, so that's...
Wait, what?
I follow him on Twitter.
There was a wildlife photo. There was a wildlife photo of the year chosen this year. Was that it?
Well, maybe
it was something about two lions.
It was
lions.
A screen grab from that. It was one was black and one was spotted. Technically, they
I
were,
don't know.
I dug through the Instagram post and they said they were jaguars. Whatever. Okay. So, Patty, any thoughts about the President's Week?
I can't.
Okay.
Thank you, Patty.
No,
I'm pretty sure he's...
I think you speak for all of us.
So much of us. I can't tweeting even.
You know, the thing that... I'll give you this. The thing that jumped out at me the most, and I'm a sucker for this every time, is the Trail of Tears and the Wounded Knee stuff, the way he continues to label Senator Warren as a... fake Native American, and what he says is so freaking insensitive.
No, don't forget when he came to honor the Navajo, the speakers. They use the
they came to him.
The code talkers. The code talkers. They come to the White House, and the son of a bitch was insulting to a level I've never seen ever in my lifetime, when he moves that portrait of Andrew Jackson from the Oval Office, which is right next to his desk, and puts it in the room where they had the ceremony. That was a big, fat, flaming orange middle finger to the Indian community.
Well, and when he said, he said, there's this one person I call Pocahontas, but I don't like her, but I like you guys.
We have a representative in Congress who they say was here a long time ago. They call her Pocahontas. But you know what? I like you because you are special.
If it's the same meeting, he just walked that right out for them. That's the stuff that bothers me the most.
Can I just say in defense of my being outraged about the crowd comparison?
Yeah, I did sort of throw you under the bus there. But he said 35,000 and that Beto had 200 or 300.
But here's the thing, and this is, and I'm just going to call him a liar because I try not to. This is the thing about, I mean, there are liars who lie to get out of something. I didn't take that last cookie. I'm lying to you. I did take the last cookie. And then there are liars who just sort of compulsively lie. And that's what I came out of with this. And it wasn't about Beto O'Rourke's crowd. It was about the fact that he said the El Paso Fire Department allowed them to squeeze more people in. Mm-hmm. He made that up.
He had nothing to gain by this lie.
And he didn't have to say it. And that's, to me, was like, what's going on here?
Well, his pants were so on fire. Thank you. And that the fire department had to call him out on the lie because he said the capacity is only 8,000.
It's bad for them.
Right. They were like, no.
And there was no reason. He could have just said, we're filled to the rafters. We've got everyone in here we possibly can.
And the entire rally was based on a lie, which is that El Paso has been much safer since they installed portions of a wall.
Okay, but can I just throw it out at you guys the way maybe he intended it? And I guarantee you this is the way his supporters heard it. I got like 35,000 and he's got like 200.
But a young man who's got very little going for himself, except he's got a great first name. He challenged us. So we have, let's say, 35,000 people tonight, and he has 200 people, 300 people. Not too good.
he didn't mean it literally. It was a figure of speech. My crowd dwarfs his. That's in print.
Well, it didn't. But it didn't.
But it didn't.
No, it didn't.
Okay. That's noteworthy, the distinction.
Well, I mean,
he had two... have you never done any advertising before?
Actually, yeah.
He's the president of the United States. He ought to be able to draw a bigger crowd than an unemployed congressman.
I think we're missing John's point, which is excellent, which is what his supporters hear is my crowd was bigger than his.
Thank you.
Even if it's not true, it may have been by a nominal number.
Or if it was a little bit. I'm just telling you, the best. My crowds are the best, and he's got
that's
nothing.
What his supporters heard.
Well, that's why I brought up the fire marshal part of it, because it's not just lying about the crowd size. I'm with you on that. But the weirdness of bringing in the fire department was just bizarre to me.
It's very interesting to me, though, that Trump is trying to sell this deal. I mean, we had this, the Congress has apparently signed off on a deal that they're going to give him, what, $1.2 billion for border security enhancements. They're going to build another
50
miles of fencing or something like that. He's trying to sell this as a victory. And then he says he's going to steal money from other accounts, take money, whatever. But this is money. This is not just money that's lying around. This is money that's going for disaster relief. It's going for, you know, building up some of the military.
Early childhood
academies.
Education. I think just take it from El Chapo.
That's what Ted Cruz proposed. Ted, hey, you're laughing. Ted Cruz proposed that in legislation. Yeah. That they would, after the
with
guilty,
RICO laws, can they take? Can
you know, Mexico finally pays for the wall.
Well, they can with RICO laws. I don't know if they can get to his money, but they probably could get money.
Is it ever paused? You know, does it strike any of you that like the last several weeks, months, like has been about 50 miles of fence that you'll never see on a border in Texas? I mean, how silly!
I was surprised that he said that when he was talking to law enforcement in El Paso, he was talking about how the wall is the most important thing, that you can have more people, you can have more technology, but none of it means anything without the wall. Well, all of it is important. There's to diminish law enforcement and their role and the kind of technology that they need, and the fact that we need judges down there to process these cases for people who are trying to come in legally.
I want to talk about two more candidates that are running for president since we all met last. Ellen Warren announced her candidacy.
Elizabeth.
Ellen. I said Ellen, didn't I? Who's Ellen Warren?
Ellen Warren is a Tribune columnist. She may be running.
Is she in?
She might be.
One-third of all Americans are now running for mayor or president of the United States. Warren is in, and Amy Klobuchar is in, the senator from Minnesota.
I really want to know what you think about Amy Klobuchar, because you've worked up there in Minnesota.
Voted for her. I've met her many times.
So
she sends me hand-signed Christmas cards. Doesn't do that to her other millions of constituents.
Did she ever throw anything at you or curse you out for writing a sloppy email?
Can I say one thing about that?
Mm-hmm. Please.
Because I left. I think you had your former coworker from Minnesota.
A friend of mine who's a talk show host.
There was a piece on Klobuchar that said she's really hard on her staff, that she's mean to her staff.
Highest turnover of any Senate staffer.
Is that true, the highest?
I think three articles.
And so the defense came out, or the defending her, saying, well, this is because she's a woman, and if she was a man, you wouldn't say that. And, you know, of course, and she said, I demand a lot. And the only thing I want to say about that argument is, by that argument, then there could never be a woman who's a jerk. Because every time a woman behaved jerk-like, it would come out to say...
No, we can't be jerks.
No, but I mean, but maybe some of them are.
No,
maybe
you don't understand that. Maybe she is a jerk.
Right.
Now, I like her. I'm not saying that. But there are women who are just jerks.
And deserve and that sort of analysis.
If you're going to use this defense every time a woman behaves jerk-like, then what you're saying is that a woman can't be a jerk.
It's hard because there is this moment of, you know, when we try to be aggressive, we're bitches. It's actually not that. I'm sorry, but and I know that it sounds like we put that on ourselves.
Let's not use the word bitches. Let's use the word jerks, okay? Because
but nobody calls us jerks.
But the point
But nobody calls it. I've never been called a jerk. I've been called a bitch. I don't know what to tell you. No one ever calls me a jerk.
What Patty is trying
to
say.
I can't be jerky.
Yeah, mansplaining.
I'm also never called
an
asshole.
That'll help.
Nobody calls me an asshole. Nobody, you know, nobody says, oh, she's really strong. She's got balls.
Okay,
they never say that. They call me the C word.
Oh, I hear that.
And they call, you know.
Okay, will you come toward me here, try to understand what I'm saying?
Yes, we can never actually be jerks.
If every time a woman behaves as a jerk, the defense is, well, it's because she's a woman, she's being treated this way, then the subterranean argument there is that women can't be a jerk.
There aren't any jerks
who are women.
On the female side.
And that's why I don't like that
particular line of defense.
Right.
And I do like Amy Klobuchar a lot.
Right. I mean, regardless of the candidate and the word you use, it's possible that some of them exhibit really bad behavior,
right.
are very jerky to their staff, that it's an accurate portrayal of them.
Right. If it's an accurate portrayal, but there's also something that feeds into it in throughout her career. I don't know what it's been like for her to have to fight and be overly aggressive in order to just even hold her own in the arena that she's
in. I'll tell you how she's done it up there. She's been underly aggressive. She is the least aggressive person you will ever meet. She's a University of Chicago graduate. She's an Ivy League graduate. She's brilliant.
I mean, if you had to pick someone who you thought would be hard on your staff, she'd be like 100.
She said, I don't suffer fools well. Yeah. And by the way, this notion that she's like that has been in the water in Minnesota for a long time. It's not a great secret to the people who pay attention to her career. It's news to me. I was a radio host, so I would bump into her. I didn't know the inner workings of her staff. I didn't know all of that. I was disappointed and troubled when I heard that. But I can only consume her as the person that I've known. And if this story is out there, maybe it's true that she doesn't suffer fools well and some of them can't take it from a woman.
Well, and how many of the, if there's somebody who isn't doing their job and they're not competent and, you know those people come through the doors, right? So how many of them were incompetent and then she has her guard up for the next one? You kind of compile
right,
this
absolutely.
Level of experience.
Well, go back and just watch her and Kavanaugh at the hearing when he called her out for drinking beer. Didn't you do that too?
You're saying there's never been a case where you drank so much that you didn't remember what happened the night before or part of what happened.
That's you're asking about, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
Could you answer the question, Judge? That's not happened. Is that your answer?
Yeah, and I'm curious if you have.
And, her father's the most famous alcoholic in Minnesota right now, and her life has been colored by that. And she could have turned on him, and she didn't. So I applaud her restraint.
But even the way she slammed that door, like somebody in a room when she talks to them like that might be like, oh, that was jerky.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more on the record. The thing that was notable about these three stories was that they were all based on anonymous sources. Now, that doesn't mean that they're false by any means, or that the allegations are false, but that I would like to see actual copies of actual emails. I'd like to hear people who actually say, yes, I am the person at whom she threw a binder.
If she does this, it's really bad behavior. If you and I have a problem, and I'm going to call you out on it, but I CC everybody on the staff to embarrass you in front of the crowd, which they say she would do, that's jerky. Bertrand just left, so you two can't get into the argument about what that is. But that's bad behavior. Producer Olive says we have to go with our recommendations now.
I'm feeling very sad right now. And that's my recommendation, is that the Mars rover Opportunity has been declared dead. They tried raising her. They tried 800 times to wake her up. It looks like there's a sandstorm that came up that they didn't expect. And she lost power and she probably froze to death. And for a mission that was supposed to last 90 days, it's lasted 15 years.
Oppie.
Is that what you call it?
We have Oppie Opportunity, the Mars rover. Yeah. Oppie.
It's a remarkable. And so do yourself a favor. Here's my recommendation. Go to NASA.org and look at the files and the science and the photographs that Opportunity sent back to us. And it's an amazing machine. And what a monument to American ingenuity.
It was supposed to last 90 days, lasted 15 years driving around on Mars, sending us pictures.
Yeah.
They sounded so sad.
And science.
The scientists were very sad.
I'm actually really sad. I really am.
I'll take you out for a drink after
that. Okay, I'm just getting a little misty.
What's your recommendation, Patty Vasquez?
I'm going to do two quick. One is the White Sox. The pitchers and catchers are in Arizona.
Here we go. Yes. The big White Sox fan.
I'm going to learn about this team.
Go Sox.
I don't know a single player on the team. I know our announcers, but I'm going to start doing my homework and learn about the team. But I also want to recommend this book, High Risers, Cabrini-Green and the Fate of American Public Housing. It's now available today in paperback. I had Ben Austin on the show last night, and we had some really interesting text from people like, if you give something away for free, people are going to destroy it. Look what they did. They're all animals. And what Ben was talking about is there were 15,000 stories in those buildings at the time that they were destroyed.
Mary Schmeek posted this week a lot about that book, just recommending it as a great read,
so
and great
good.
Research. And I thought, okay, I've got to do that. I have the book. I haven't read it. The name of the book is
High Risers. Yeah. High Risers. Yep.
How about you, Mr. Zorn?
I binged a Netflix series called Russian Doll.
Yes!
That was going to be my recommendation.
Glad I beat you to it. Did you see the whole thing?
I'm so afraid to cross the street now.
Oh, my goodness.
My
upstairs.
Family laughed their fool heads off. And then it gets weirder.
People all compare it to Groundhog Day. And essentially the theme is this woman finds herself. She's at her own birthday party. And she dies fairly quickly after that, and then she wakes up again, and she's at her birthday party again. But it's not a comedy the way Groundhog Day is, and it doesn't have the same rhythms as Groundhog Day.
What makes it so good?
The world keeps changing under her
feet. The character's really good. She's this funny Jewish gal, right, Eric?
Natasha Lyonne is the actress. Yeah.
I don't know that.
She's in Orange is the New Black, right?
And American Pie.
Oh, okay. And it starts off kind of this, it's a little campy at first, but then it gets darker and stranger and more interesting. And I don't want to say too much more than that, but it is addictive, and it's only 8 episodes.
She's a great TV character. 29-minute episodes, too. You can watch it in a sitting, the whole series. My recommendation is Team of Vipers. I don't know if I mentioned this before. I've been reading it. Cliff Sims, he's the guy that was in the room, and Sean Spicer was writing his language to defend the size of the president's inaugural crowd. He was that close to the president and the presidency. His book, Team of Vipers, is about his 500 days in the White House. I didn't like him at first. I'm 100 pages in, and I'm kind of liking him now. It's actually a pretty good book so far. So far, that's my tentative recommendation. And that's it this week. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Patty, thanks for coming in.
This was great.
It's a long day for Ms. Vasquez. She's on Pretty Late, you know, on WGN. Eric Zorn and Scott Standis, thank you, guys.
Thank you for having us.
We're produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.